The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain podcast on ESPN Radio.
Sports league after sports league. Athlete after athlete. When it comes to what happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota, it seems like there's a national unity on the outrageousness. But now, as statements roll out, it seems like there's disunity on their acceptance. What's to be said? What should be said? What should be done? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. Here to talk about it with me is a senior NFL writer at The Undefeated. Jason Reed is on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line. What's up, Jason?
Well, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I think last time we were together, it was morning show, Golic and Wingo. I think we had an interesting conversation about Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, race, and quarterback play in the NFL. Here we are again. Higher stakes, bigger conversations. Are you surprised, first of all, Jason, that the national reception, by my estimation, pretty universal, right, left, white, black, rich, poor, over what happened to George Floyd has been unity, has been universal condemnation? Are you surprised by that?
Well, no, because of the video evidence. I mean, any decent person, regardless of where you fall on the political spectrum, regardless of where you are in terms of your socioeconomic status, I think any decent person looking at that video, the first video, could only surmise that what that officer and those officers did to that human being, let's just take race out of it, that human being was reprehensible. So I'll be honest with you, Will, if there had not been, for the most part, universal condemnation, I would have been surprised.
Yeah, I actually 100% agree with you. I think, you know what I think happened, Jason, is I think people used common sense and followed the facts. That was clear and obvious. I think a lot of times, by the way, when we've had big conversations or big disagreements on issues, it's because it hasn't been as clear cut. This was clear cut. That's the thing. It was obvious. Now, in the wake of it, we have athletes and teams all issuing statements. But they're not all being received exactly the same. Some praised, some questioned, silence questioned. In your mind, Jason, what do you think the right response from the sports world is?
Well, in terms of individual players or leagues or teams, I mean,
either way, well, every one of them, every one of those things you just named, I mean, have put out a statement,
yeah.
Right?
Well, I think from a player standpoint, I know I do a lot of work with the NFL Players Coalition, and I know for years, African American players have told me that it would definitely help in terms of trying to move the ball on these improvements that they're trying to make within society, that if more, let's say, superstar white quarterbacks would come out and be allies in this fight for justice. And I was very impressed with Joe Burrow, Carson Wentz, the statements that they came out and made, and they made it clear that they stand for something that is... it's just right. I mean, there are very few times, I think, in life when you can make a delineation between just this is clearly right and this is clearly wrong. And these young quarterbacks came out and said, hey, they made their statements and they made it known where they stand. So I think that the response to what they both did was overwhelmingly praised. If you're making, if you're alluding to the NFL statement, which was widely criticized on social media. The point that a lot of people made was that it's very hypocritical of the NFL to, on one hand, come out and make this statement, and we can, debate whether the statement was good or not, but to making a statement essentially in support of the Floyd and against what happened with the police, when they were the league that shut down the player who peacefully tried to protest to shine a light on the things which are which was seen on that video. So I get what you're saying from that standpoint. That I think I get what you're saying. I don't want to.
Well, let me clarify, because I don't think it's just the NFL. Different statements are being received different ways. Let me tell you what I'm talking about. Like some, and I'm not gonna be able to name the organizations, not because I don't want to, just because I can't remember. In some people's minds, haven't been specific enough. So there's like the acknowledgement of racism in America. That seems to be one step. The next step is to the acknowledgement of police brutality. Then there's the acknowledgement of systemic racism. And then there's the role that race plays in all of these things, right? Police brutality and so forth. And organizations that have become the most specific on some of those responses seem to be what a lot of people want. See, I guess, you know, the thing is, Jason, every step of the way in the conversation, it gets more complicated. And a Twitter statement to me doesn't do a lot to help advance it. I'm a little bit jaded or skeptical about a lot of that stuff. But, I mean, I understand acknowledgement of people's situation life is an important first step. But then we start to have to ask the real hard conversations about the societal ills we have and how much race plays a role in each one of these things, right? And in this one, I think it starts with policing. How much does racial inequities play a role in policing?
Well, I mean, I know that the Washington Post has done a lot of reporting around police shootings, and, you know, they've compiled a database, I believe, if memory serves, since 2015 shootings in this country. And, mm-hmm. and African-Americans are disproportionately shot by police. There are more white people than black people shot by police, but mm-hmm. white people outnumber black people by like six times more white people than black people in the country. So disproportionately African Americans are shot. And, you know, a bunch of their other reporting says that, you know, you stand a much higher chance of being killed by police if you're African American than if you're white. So I think when we have this discussion, I think it would be naive to suggest that, not saying that you're being naive, I think just in general, it would be naive to suggest that there is not a great deal involved with race and policing when we see that there's basically not always equal justice across the board.
Yeah, here's the thing, and I had this conversation a moment ago, Jason, with someone, with Clinton Yates. Where I fall on this, and I'm telling you this because I want your reaction to it, doesn't seem to make anybody pleased. I know exactly the database you're talking about, and I've looked at the FBI stats as well. And you're right, the gross numbers are higher for whites. When you adjust it for population, then the black numbers jump up higher, right? But then you have to be fair, then adjust it for crime rates as well, because police presence is going to be greater where crime is the greatest. And when you do all that, specifically shootings and killings become somewhat even between black and white. They become proportionate. But that's not the end of the story. You know, in that same database, that Washington Post you talk about, it says low-level interactions with the police show much greater with African Americans, and many of those experiences are very negative. So what I get to at some point, Jason, is this. We can acknowledge racial bias exists. We can acknowledge racial inequities exist in policing and in the country on an individual level and all those things. And George Floyd's situation is an absolute travesty. But I'm not sure that particularly is exactly what we're trying to solve. We are trying to solve it, but I'm not sure that particularly is a racial issue.
Well, I don't know how it could be looked as anything, but I mean, you have African Americans. So I think it was Will Smith who said it's not that, you know, racism is getting worse with the police; it's just being videotaped. And you know, anecdotally, I mean, we can talk about the FBI statistics, we can talk about the Washington Post reporting, but I mean, I just know anecdotally, being a black man of my age, I was stopped constantly, okay, when I was a college student driving home from driving back to campus, driving home from where I work. And, you know, I know that for me, I mean, there were times when I just said to the police, I said, hey, you know, what is it? And they used a word and they told me I'm black driving at dark in a place where I shouldn't be. So, I mean, that's my frame of reference. That's what I fall back on.
Without a doubt. By the way, I'm not denying that at all. That's, in fact, in line with what I just said, is the interactions, especially at low levels, show disproportionate interactions between African Americans and the police on that front of what you just described.
But I don't want to misunderstand. So is your point though that what happened to Floyd is not the norm, that's kind of an exception?
I don't know that I want to say it's an exception. I think it's also not the norm. I do think that, Jason. Yes. I think that many, many African Americans have interactions with the police that end up negative and probably reflect some prevalence of racial bias. But I don't know the point of the conversation is to figure out the problem so we can figure out a solution. That's what I'm trying to get to. But I feel like we always exist in this nebulous area of trying to solve either individual problems of the heart or nebulous concepts that if we can't define, we can't solve them. That's my frustration, Jason. And that's when I guide the conversation these ways, I'm trying to arrive at a definition of the problem so then we can figure out how do we solve them.
I mean, I guess, yeah, and I see what you're saying. And I guess the opposite tack of that would be, well, that the problem is inherent bias in the criminal justice system historically. Now, if you say that, if you make a blanket statement like that, well, that's such an overwhelming topic. Like, you're talking about historic systemic oppression and racism. Well, what are we going to do to, if you accept that premise, then what fundamentally can we do to attack something like that? That is baked in. And then if you don't accept that premise, then we're back at square one, not agreeing on what even the problem is. I guess where I'm at with it is, I think what happened to Floyd happens a lot more than a certain segment of society wants to believe. And I think that it happens just the amount of time that a certain segment of society wants to believe. And I guess the question is, if we can all agree that what we saw on that videotape was abhorrent, was criminal, was just against anything about human decency, how can we bridge that gap between the people who think it doesn't happen that much and the people who think it happens all the time?
Yeah. Right. Right. Real quick, though, what do you mean? What happens all the time? That somebody dies at the hands of an officer?
That black and brown people within the criminal justice system are treated like that more often than not.
When you say treated like that, do you mean brutally or do you mean being killed?
Brutally. I mean, yeah. he wound up like I don't know that those officers meant to kill him, but they definitely meant to brutalize him. I think from just a logic, common sense standpoint, you keep your multiple officers had their knees on his back and his neck for in one case up almost up to 9 minutes. I don't think any logical argument could be advanced to say they were not trying to brutalize him.
No, I agree with that, and I would go further. I would say they dehumanized him. They were not viewing him as a human being in that moment.
Yeah, we're totally on the same page with that.
I know it's never a good conversation. It's probably not one for sports radio, but here we are anyway. But this idea, right, at some point, Jason, I just think we have to have a real conversation with definitions about systemic racism and deal with, personal experience like you shared with me of yours as well. Also bring in the data, because I just don't think we're going to get anywhere until we get to those moments. Like, let's define the societal ill to fix the societal ill. I just think that's where we have to get at some point.
No, and Will, I definitely agree with you on that. But I think the problem is there's a chasm between a group that believes that, you know what, yeah, that happens, but it is an outlier. And there's a group that believes, no, that's not an outlier, that's every day. And I think that's the problem, bridging that gap, because I still don't think we're there on being able to say, hey, we all agree on this.
Well, we'd have to pick the conversation up right there is where I would love to. We'll leave it there right now. NFL writer for the undefeated Jason Reed here on The Will Cain Show. Jason, I appreciate you being on.
You got it, Will. Anytime, man.
Okay, take care. My phone line's lit up. I want to hear from you. We'll be talking. It's The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We overcome a lot just like so many other races. This didn't just start happening.
How long have we been screaming about this?
This cannot be normalized.
So when does it actually change?
I would be lying if I didn't say that it's scary and that it's fearful for me.
People forget. We don't talk about it and we move on. And the idea of what Kaepernick was doing was to make sure that we don't forget and we don't move on.
We're not here designed only to entertain. We're actually living and breathing human beings.
Will it be another night of fires and destruction? Or will this country move back to a place where it can heal? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Major League Baseball intends to propose a shorter season in which they would pay players a full prorated share of their salaries, sources told ESPN. The league believes the late March agreement that allowed it to set the schedule, that this would fulfill players' pro-rata desires. So if you'll remember what happened is in March they decided on pro-rata salaries. So half the season, half your salary. Then Major League Baseball, facing the reality they may not have fans in the stands, came back and proposed massive pay cuts from the pro-rated salaries. They knew they wouldn't have just a pro-rated amount of revenue. Major League Baseball Players Association came back and proposed, I believe, a 114-game proposal. What I'm reading this, and Nuno, whoever's getting this information, we can verify. I feel like this is the owner saying, okay, we'll go back to prorated, but we're going to go less than half a season. We'll see. And by the way, in the meantime, it looks like the nation is moving towards the prospect of having fans in the stands, whether or not that be 25% or whatever it may be. Of course, by the way, no one's been talking about coronavirus for a week. Let me go to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Let me talk to Jack in Michigan. What's up, Jack?
Hey, how you doing, Will?
Hey.
Hey, listen, I'm a police officer, and I think the first thing that I want to say is that I'm appalled and disgusted by the actions of those officers. I also think that you're trying to hit the nail on the head with getting to the bottom line problem and then trying to understand how we fix it, right? Now, do we have a systemic problem of racism in our country? Probably. And is that systemic problem probably more prevalent in certain cities than it is in others? Yeah. However, I think this has to start with the police and the police departments, right? I mean, I think that that's the voice that needs to be heard as much as you're hearing from these people who are being oppressed upon. And I think that those are bad police doing what they did. And I think that there's a lot of good police out there that are as appalled by the situation as I am, and now it's coming to a determination of, okay, what do we do about it, and how do we do about it best? And I think just having a louder voice and trying to break this down almost to a microcosm of saying, you know, we can't remove police until systemic racism is out of our society. I mean, that's just not an option. So we've got to go a little bit micro than that and say, how do we start working on getting it out of these people who are supposed to serve and protect everybody. And the best way to do that is to try to, you know, A, prevent them from joining the police department in the first place, and B, get them out if they're showing signs of it. I mean, to have this officer who had 15-plus complaints on him is ridiculous.
Hey, Jack, can I ask you this?
Yeah.
First of all, I appreciate you telling me that I'm trying to hit the nail on the head. I truly am. And a lot of people don't like it. I mean, I don't know what they want in return. They want me to just say all the things that they like people to say. The truth is, I don't think just all those things do that much, to be honest, other than make the speaker more favorable in people's eyes. I'm trying to nail down a problem so that we can solve a problem. Your solution of weed out bad cops, I think that's clearly something that's got to happen, right? I mean, that's. Can I ask you about two other things really quickly? And I don't have a ton of time, but
for sure,
I you know, I don't like these blanket statements. Oh, and there's a lot of it going around. Cops are all racist, or cops are, or, you know, like to brutalize people or whatever, or even, you know, anything that is sweeping is usually very, very wrong. Right. But, it seems to me that if you could change two changes in policing, you do a lot. One is move to more like a community policing model where officers are more integrated into communities and have relationships with people. If you see some of these cops who are just talking to people during these protests, it seems to have a lot of effect. And the other is just do a little more on the de-escalation of the militarized side of police. Like, everything is very tactical and aggressive. And I'm speaking out of some level of ignorance, Jack. I got to be honest. But those seem to me like, beyond weeding out bad cops from a strategic standpoint, ways we can move in good directions.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a cohesive effort, Will. But at the same time, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I can't go down to a protest and announce myself as a white police officer and feel safe.
Right.
I mean, in some of these certain circumstances. Now, not all of them. But, I mean, that's just not something that me and my fellow officers, even the ones who are appalled by this, in this environment, on what's being happening over the last several days, we wouldn't feel safe doing that.
Totally agree. This has to end. And I don't know how, Jack. I mean, like, I don't know how this, but it's not going to be a pretty end, most likely. For what's going on right now, the destruction, it has to end.
Yeah, but you still have to get down to how are we going to fix this, right? I mean, how,
yes,
a year,
yes,
from now, what is going to be different? And I don't know how we do that, because you're not going to even change the racial society outlook and the racial society bigotry that's out there in a year. But I think you could do a damn lot of good within the specific police departments.
Hey, just on that note, and I appreciate the call, Jack. I have to go on that. For what it's worth, people care about knowing these things. Police shootings of unarmed people, black or white, since 2015. I believe this is, I can be fact checking, I'm pretty damn sure it's true, have dropped dramatically over the past 5 years. It doesn't get solved overnight or in a year, but improvements can be made. I'll have more thanks for the call, Jack, and appreciate what you do. I'll have more on Major League Baseball's negotiation with the Major League Baseball Players Association, plus your calls coming up on the Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school, or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Right now, I'm happy to see all of the players speak up, particularly the white ones. But I do think that this is an easy time to speak up. While I applaud them, we need them to speak up when it's not easy.
It can't just be us minorities or African Americans. It has to be all people. And the white athletes who are now stepping up need to continue to step up.
The Carson Wentz of the world, the Steve Kerrs of the world, the Stan Van Gundys of the world, the Tom Bradys of the world, and others. They understand to some degree where all of this is coming from, because they share the same locker room.
I have an update on Major League Baseball's negotiations to bring baseball back in 2020. Coming up here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. Plus, I want to get to your calls on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. It's been a serious day. It's been serious issues, and it's needed to be had. I think it needs to be had in the way we're having it, and even more. Got to identify problems to find solutions. But I did want to have this conversation. I just asked the guys during the commercial break. I said, I just stepped outside earlier today and I shot hoops with one of my sons a little bit earlier. And, you know, I stroked one, just all net, nothing but net. And I said to him, son, doesn't that feel good? Like, just nothing but net feels awesome. You could bomb one from wherever you want on the court, but if it catches a little bit of rim, it doesn't feel anything like nothing but net. I was saying, what are the things in sports feel that way, right? I think if you hum a tight spiral right on target, you know, to your receiver, it does. And by the way, when you just reach diamond, suck up the ball with your hands right there, that feels awesome too. I'm not a golfer, but everybody talks about dead solid, perfect shot. I was thinking about other things in sports that feel that way. Mike A said he kind of was bashful about it, but when you spin one and hit a strike in bowling, walk away without even watching.
When you just know and you turn around and you just hear the explosion. I've had a few of those.
I assume it's similar to golf. I was never good at baseball, but hitting the home run, you know, connecting squarely and crushing the barrel. It's got to just feel great, just crushing it.
It'd be pretty fun to think of what are all those things in each individual sport. What is it for a pitcher, I wonder? Like, when is it
it's
just?
It's
got
to be that sound when a fastball catches the mitt just right and it makes that loud thwop.
It's got to be. What are those moments in sport that just feel good? I'm going to get you your update on Major League Baseball's negotiations in just a moment, but Andre in North Carolina is on the phone. What's up, Andre?
How you doing, Will Kane?
What's up?
Well, I've been on hold for God knows how long now, but thank you guys for taking my call.
You bet.
My question for you on this is, I apologize for my pause on this. My question is, I'm in a mixed relationship. My daughter's at a protest right now in Raleigh, North Carolina. What am I supposed to tell her and her mom that I can do to make them feel safe in this situation? As a black man, what am I supposed to say to my wife and my child that I'm supposed to protect every day of my life and provide for to make them feel safe?
I don't know, Andre. Are you talking about right now at the protest, or are you talking about in everyday life?
I'm talking about in general. Just in general. My daughter's been blessed with white privilege 90% of her life because my wife, luckily, has allowed her to be around her white family the majority of her life. She's never had to experience the fact of truly being black. She's never had to have the animosity of being stopped while being black. She's never had to experience the same things that my nieces and my nephews on my side of the family exactly had to deal with.
I'm sorry, Andre, out of curiosity, why is that? Why is your daughter had not had to experience that?
Well, because she's mixed. Because regardless of how it goes, that she's black, she looks closer to being white. She's not as dark complexion as the rest of us. She doesn't have those problems that the rest of us have, but yet still, she still has those problems. Generally, when people see her, she looks as Hispanic or white based on who's looking at her. And so as a white male and a white, as a white lawyer, explain to me, what exactly can I do here? What conversation should I have to say, yes, I'm supposed to protect you. I'm supposed to take care of you. I'm supposed to provide for you. In a situation like this, you're downtown, you're protesting for what's right. You're downtown doing what's good. You're downtown expressing your views. You're doing it peacefully. I just got a text from my wife and my daughter laying on the ground with a lot of white kids and a lot of black kids. Kid down there protesting just as peaceful as they can be, and I'm sitting at home in fear that somebody's going to spray pepper spray on her or somebody's going to try to attack her. What am I supposed to do?
Can I ask you an honest question, Andre? Are you asking me rhetorically, or do you really want me to attempt to answer that question?
No, I really want you to answer.
Okay, because I don't think I'm the best person to answer that. I don't think I'm the most qualified, but I'll do my best if you're asking earnestly. Right now in this protest, I don't have answers. I would say stay with the true protesters who are peacefully trying to communicate a message that they want change in America, and stay away from those who are there specifically to hijack and destroy. I think, and I'm guessing here, you can probably delineate between the two groups. I think it's pretty clear would be my guess, and I would stay far away from those who are there to destroy and stay close to those who are looking to create change. As for your everyday life, again, I'm highly unqualified, but I would say this. I hear you. I hear your personal experience. I hear your personal fear as a father. I believe you. I don't believe that is manufactured. I would try to share with my child sober reality. I would say the vast majority of law enforcement, the vast majority, is overwhelmingly positive and doesn't present a threat to your life. But the prospect exists that there are those who are either bad apples, who are biased, and who give you reason for your fear and insecurity. And how to deal with that potential out there? I don't know. I don't think you can live in fear. I think you have to be able to do what is right, and you have to be able to try to effectuate change. But I don't know how to help you handle that fear, nor any other out there. As parents, we have a ton. I don't know how to tell you how to deal with that other than to try to give your children, your family, as much accurate information that you can so that they can choose their course in life and their actions, you hope, as responsibly and rationally as they will. I don't know if that's any worth 2 cents. We'll get you a cup of coffee, whatever that saying goes. But you ask earnestly, I'll try to answer earnestly. All right, coming up, I've got an update for you on Major League Baseball, plus more of your calls here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with GEICO? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
What we've seen transpire this week, this is a part of American history. So this is nothing new.
I'm here because they're not going to demean the character of George Floyd.
I was really upset. I was really disgusted at how this, you know, this continues to happen. And certain people are just not held accountable. And that's really just how, you know, where all my rage is coming from.
My message is this. When are we going to start listening to one another?
Damian Woody and I did some listening to one another. We did an hour-long conversation on everything going on in this country. I think it starts in a necessary place, and that is with mutual respect. It doesn't require agreement every step of the way, but it's real as you work through different experiences, different feelings, and different events across this country right now. Go check that out in the Will Cain Show podcast, along with the entire show today. Brought to you by Eno, the Capital One assistant that matches, it catches everything you might look wrong on your credit card, sends you an alert on the phone, and helps you fix them. What's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. So this is per Jeff Passan, ESPN Major League Baseball insider. Major League Baseball intends to propose a shorter season in which they would pay players a full prorated share of their salaries. Now that shorter season is expected to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 regular season games. The exact number is still being considered, but the aim will be to return in July. If you'll remember, originally Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association agreed upon a prorated salary. So half the games, half the salary. But as, if you'll remember, and I know it seems like months ago, the coronavirus pandemic that put an end to the economy in the United States and the prospect of having fans in the stand, Major League Baseball players realized, or rather Major League Baseball owners realized, they would not be having half their revenue with half the game. So they proposed major pay cuts. Players were having none of it. They wanted their prorated salaries. It looks like now owners are saying, okay, we'll do prorated salaries, but we're going to play much fewer games. Not 82, but in the neighborhood of 50 games. We'll see how this proposal goes between Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association. I've got time for just a few more calls here on the Will Cain Show on what's been a heavy day, but I want to hear from you guys. Drew in Texas. What's up, Drew?
Hey, Will, I appreciate that, man. I'll try to make it quick. I mean, when did the United States of America or just the world in general just end up being just white and black? I mean, there's just brown people that, you know, are getting shot and stuff like that too, and there's also black people that are cops that are shooting brown people, black people that are black people that are shooting people that are, I mean, that are black. I mean, it's just, it's frustrating for me to listen because only one time during this 2 hours that I've been listening, one time that we had somebody mention a Hispanic person, a Latino person or anything like that. And I mean, I hate how it's so just focused on, and especially like when Stephen A. says it too, like, you know, when the white man gets a cold, the black man gets pneumonia and all this good stuff like that. But I'm like, guys, the only way this stuff is going to work, and let me mention this, I've gotten my butt handed to me as a Hispanic man by white cops. I've got my butt handed to me before, and that's that I came from a family of all law enforcement, complete law enforcement, my father, my brother, my uncles, everybody. But when we react off of emotion and we don't look at it logically and we don't look for the problem to the solution, which for me would be, let's all come together, the Hispanics and blacks and whoever feels like they're oppressed and feels like that's something that we're having to deal with, because I felt that way and I felt helpless and I felt like I was being picked on and being singled out and I felt upset, very upset. But emotionally, I didn't react emotionally to it. I acted logically to it, understanding that these guys were bad people. That guy, the white guy that had me and the black guy that had me behind the stairs whooping my butt, I didn't react emotionally to it because I understood that with the way that I grew up and the things that I saw and the majority of the encounters that I was having as a Hispanic man, as a minority, were pretty much good. And I dictated a lot of these interactions with these people, you know, these interactions that could have gone bad if I acted a certain way, if I acted emotionally because I got my butt handed to me by a black cop and a white cop. But we react emotionally and we don't act logically. And I'm listening to these guys cutting you off in conversations and stuff that we're not looking for the solution to the problem. We're just too busy with trying to push our agenda, push our point of view and the way that we think, just like he was telling you earlier. No, you should be saying this. Nah, bro, you shouldn't be saying this. Will has his opinion. You have your opinion. You're acting emotionally expecting Will to act a certain way and to say a certain thing. And Will has his opinion and saying, hey, I think of it this way. But we still aren't coming up with the solution to the problem. We're not.
Drew,
and we're making it too black and white and black and white.
This is a really good call, Drew. So, first of all, something I've tried to succeed at and something I failed at today. I've tried to succeed at living up to what you just described, react to something logically and not emotionally. I've been trying to push for specificity and always have because that's the only way you can get to a solution. I've tried. I don't know if I've succeeded because if I look at my social media or I take some of my calls, it would suggest I haven't succeeded. It was not appreciated. But I failed at something else for sure. And that's, you bring such a great point, man. This country is not just black and white. What a simplistic, flat view of this world. And you talk about even law enforcement interactions. There are black officers. There are Latino officers. Obviously, there are black, Latino, and white citizenry. And we have this conversation as though everything is simply an interaction between black and white. It is not. It is not. That's not to deny that there are issues between black and white. There are. But we're trying to simplify it a little too much. We're not trying. We're succeeding in simplifying it entirely too much. This country is full of diverse people in ethnicity, but more importantly, in life experiences, and perhaps even more importantly than that, in thought processes. And the only way you bring a great diverse nation of people together is to talk, to do what Drew just said, hopefully, to hear each other out, to have my point of view shared with your point of view, see where they mesh and see where they diverge. And see if in that process we can do two things, find solutions, maybe bust each other's balls and have a little sports talk and fun along the way. That's a pretty good life, I think.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.